What is your musical background?
Well, my musical background is probably more in bands. I had a band in Switzerland where I was born, and then we went to Hamburg because we knew that the Beatles, you know, started off in Hamburg without ever, you know, we've never been to Hamburg, so we went there. And then I came to London after that, and I really starting more small, you know, starting to do small soundtracks with, you know, more band-based stuff, and then gradually, you know, getting string quartets, et cetera, until, and then expanding really until I was working with a full orchestra. At the same time, though, I was, you know, I am, you know, kind of classically trained as well. I'm a flautist. And I play, and I've been trained on the piano as well. So, but I think I was early on, I was more interested in, you know, synthesizers, for example. You know, I bought, you know, when I finally could get the money together as a teenager, I bought a big Moog and, you know, restored that. So I was very interested in sort of electronic music at the beginning.
So, so what was it that inspired you to write film and TV music?
Well, I've always made my own films at the beginning as well. So I made some animations, and in fact, I still do. I still have a band, and we make films as well. And this is more in a sort of fine art context, probably, but also, you know, for stage, we do projections. And also, I've written some operas that are made for the screen, basically, that I made, you know, directed as well, mm-hmm. and composed. And I think it's from doing things like that where, you know, people then just ask me to write music for their films, really. And then that's what sort of got me hooked on that, really. So it happened maybe more by accident. It wasn't initially the plan. I saw myself maybe more as a sort of composer of operas and
yeah, yes,
symphonies and things like that. So, and then I started to find, you know, the writing for the screen really interesting. And now I find it's actually maybe even, you know, more interesting to, you know, more interesting to write for the screen than without, you know, having any image, you know.
So what is the first thing you do when beginning to write a score?
Well, the first thing I do is probably, you know, have a good chat with the filmmaker. We have a bit of a brainstorm, and maybe I'll just do some, you know, really wild sketches, and we'll try those out, you know. So I'd always at the beginning like to try some really daring ideas. And then maybe, you know, because there is always a risk that, you know, you're playing a bit too safe, you know, because there is always a big chain of people involved. You know, there are producers and then executives and, you know. So I think it's good to at least start at the beginning with some quite, you know, far out and daring stuff, you know, because it will probably always get watered down a little bit further down the line. So what we'll do is, you know, I'll make some little sketches. Sometimes I get maybe a musician in and we do maybe some improvisation as well, or I sample some bits and we see if the general feel works. Okay, I think it always takes me longest to work out a good feel, you know, for you know, and even, you know, because you really sometimes there are some films where you could go in any direction, you know, you could have, because sometimes you really have like no guidelines at all, you know, nobody quite knows what to do, you know, it could be a symphonic score, I mean, there's maybe not the money for that, but you know, kind of symphonic sounding score, mm-hmm. or it could be just on a single cello or on a single guitar, or it could be really avant-garde, or it could be really baroque, or, you know, there are some films that are, you know, completely open. So I think that those are the interesting ones, I think, where you then can really, you know, try out some more daring ideas, really.
Okay. Well, now, you did mention that you composed some music for some shorts as well, and for your own shorts. What can you tell me about your short Hell for Leather?
Yeah. Well, that is one of Hell's Letter is one of those operas that I wrote. So it's about half an hour long, and it's a motorbiker opera. So, but it's not so much a motorbiker musical, but it is a sort of full blown opera with big voices and big singers. Though it's kind of tongue in cheek as well. It's a sort of the story of Satan's fall from heaven, and it's shot in black and white. And we had fantastic art department. We had whole park of bikes really that we could use. It's kind of Mad Max style. Bikes and really mad outfits and we found I was specifically looking for opera singers that could ride a bike as well.
Yes.
So we were for weeks we were doing auditions actually in London, which were great fun. So we auditioned hundreds of singers I think in the end, and that was almost part of the workshops. It was sort of part of the production to do these workshops as well. So, and it was fantastic fun. In the end, the lead actually, who has just a fantastic voice, great tenor. He actually couldn't ride a bike, so but we sent him to lessons, and he actually learned to ride a bike just for the film. So,
well, that was actually going to be my question: is how many opera singers actually ride motorbikes?
Well, quite a lot. You'd be surprised. Quite a lot. Maybe it's more of an English thing, I don't know, but in London there are quite a lot of bikers, with a lot of biker opera singers, with big bikes, good leather outfits.
I would not have expected that. But now, did you? You also wrote and directed that Hell for Leather. Did you find that helped you in your music process as well?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I can see myself really as a director, but because I wrote the music, and I was seeing really, doing it more out of its musical drive, So it was. It made it quite easy because also we then had a sort of I made up a basic piano track and a click track, and so the singer sang actually live to that on set. They weren't miming, and we had a conductor, and so it was everything sort of fitted into this musical structure. So for me, it was a bit like doing a recording session, where you have the score and you just have to sort of get that in the can somehow. So it was. I'd probably find it more difficult to direct something without music, So, but I am working on some new film as well, but which isn't really an opera, though it will have some singing on it. But I think I can't really call it an opera. But it's a peer. It's set in the 16th century. 17th century, and it will be musically driven primarily as well. So I will write most of the score in advance. And again, the images will kind of fit into the score in a way. So I'll be probably directing that in a similar way again, which, for me actually worked out quite well.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how did you first become involved in the Miss Marple series of films?
I think it was by accident that I got involved in that. A friend of mine was editor on that, and he threw my name into the pool, and they looked at loads of composers at the time, and was more at that time people considered me more as a kind of wild person, doing things like Hell for Leather and also, for example, Nine Lives of Thomas Katz, which was a film that was kind of known here but had a real avant-garde soundtrack. So, for Miss Marple, you wouldn't really think of somebody like that. But
right.
But they you know, they liked, because also they wanted to go in a different direction, so they liked what I've done. And then it was like an endless, you know, screening process, and they, you know, we had to pitch and all that. And so, and in the end, you know, they selected me. And I think, but I think it had also to do with, probably to do with Andy Wilson, who directed the first Miss Marple, who also was a, he had, you know, he knew Hell for Leather quite well, and he said, "Oh, so that was you doing it?" And because he's a, you know, he's more a sort of biker type person as well. So that maybe that's why, kind of by accident, really, I got into that. And then, but then, you know, I enjoy doing things like that, and you know, for me, it was nice to do something that was a sort of mixture between English pastoral music and my own style, really. So so after that, you know, they, I got immediately hired for loads of, you know, British TV, you know, shows, really. So which before I was more in the kind of independent film scene.
So now, what is your approach to these Miss Marple scores? Are they all the same, or do you kind of approach them each a little bit differently?
Yeah, no, each Miss Marple really is like its own film, so very much. Also because, you know, they have new, different directors each time, different camera man or woman each time, and they are, and also it's not, you know, they are self-contained stories as well. So they, it, apart from Miss Marple, you know, the character Jane Marple, there aren't really any other characters that go through the series.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, they are really designed to be completely independent. So really, it's like a scoring a film, you know, each time. Really, it will, of course, there is, you know, Miss Marple has her themes, and but then the main thing about these is that they are, that there is a theme for, you know, maybe for the murder or the first murder in one of those Miss Marples, and the music has to actually work really hard in those films because the stories are really complicated. Oh, I find them complicated, you know, by today's standards I think they are complicated, you know, when you have 15 suspects, for example, and so, you know, or you have plenty of characters, and it often goes through, you know, there's flashbacks in time from the 1950s to the 1930s, then to 1910, etc. And when I get these films on DVD without any music or just with some temp music on, I have to watch them about three times to actually understand what's going on.
Okay.
And then, you know, the challenge for me is to design the music in such a way that it really becomes clear and exciting, and you can also follow those different strands, and it's often sort of family stories, and you know, the brother in the 30s did that, and he, so, and you know, if you've got all the right themes for these little subplots, I think it's that these stories become, you know, interesting to watch, and it and then it is possible to squeeze a complicated story like that into 90 minutes of film.
Mm-hmm. So now you mentioned a Miss Marple scene, but does any other thematic material cross over into the different films, or is it just that sort of that theme?
Well, I mean, Miss Marple has more than one theme.
Okay.
I have. You know, there is Miss Marple theme, which is basically the theme that appears on the top, on the credits now, and maybe sometimes on the titles. And then I've got a Miss Marple thinking theme, and I have a Miss Marple sleuthing theme, and plus some other, you know, little bits, really. So, and because as she is really the only character that appears in more than one episode, those are the sort of themes that go through the series.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting now, actually, because there is a new actress now playing Miss Marple.
Oh, yes.
So I don't know if you know. Yeah, it's Julia McKenzie. So it's Geraldine McEwan is not doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Julia McKenzie. So now I had to change. Well, I didn't have to, but I changed the theme a little bit to match the character of the new actress, really, because I think she is slightly different to Geraldine McEwan. Geraldine McEwan was quite spiky in a way.
Okay.
So there is a sort of spikiness about the theme. The theme has evolved a little bit now.